poor. But the rich answer roughly, a man of many companions may come to ruin, but there is a friend who sticks closer than a brother. As we begin our conversation this evening, I want to start us off by looking at verse 17. And the reason for this is, just personally, this is one of those proverbs that really sticks out to me. It's one that I've found to be very practical, very important, and I think it's just one of those proverbs that we need to use a lot more, and life would be a lot better if we used this this one a lot more. Verse 17 is, the one who states his case first seems right until the other comes and examines him. How often is it when you've got, you know, different news stories that break, you know, things are reported as being, you know, this thing happened and it's presented in a certain way. And then, you know, a couple weeks later or months or whatever, you know, maybe you're like, whatever happened with that case? And you go back and you look into it and you find out, oh, wait a minute. What was originally reported, that actually wasn't what really happened. It was something completely different in the end. That's, I mean, for a variety of reasons, you want to be careful about imputing motives. But very often, when something happens or something is told, you're not often given the whole story. You may only be given part of it. And a wise person recognizes that, you know, when you hear us, when you hear a story, you know, a person's always going to present it a certain way. And anytime any of us present a story, you know, we have a tendency, whether we recognize it or not, it may not necessarily be conscious, but, you know, we want to present things that, you know, we want to make ourselves look good, or we want ourselves to not look as bad as perhaps, you know, the other parties involved in the, whatever story we're telling. And so this is in terms of wisdom, wisdom recognizes, that just because someone speaks first does not mean that's the whole story. Wisdom waits and, recognizes that there might be two sides to a story. Just because someone has spoken to us first does not mean that's right or that's the whole truth of what happened. We see a lot of this as well with like gossip online. It's very easy. I've seen a lot of this even in Christian circles of people have some kind of complaint, they have some kind of grievance, and they just, you know, they just go out and badmouth or slander groups of people, and maybe what they're saying is true, or maybe they've slanted it and there may be some half truths and some things that aren't quite true, or maybe there's other context that explains that that might not have been the whole story or the whole situation. There might be some important details that are missing. And so it's important for us that any time, whether it's, as, you know, just something on the secular news, whether it's, you know, things we hear about other churches or other situations, that, you know, we have to be careful about jumping to judgment, about that situation. And I'll just say for myself, you know, as a pastor, we hear a lot of things, and sometimes you don't have the ability to verify the whole story. You know, you just hear things, and sometimes they're about things going on, you know, hundreds or thousands of miles away, and you just have to be careful to, that, okay, yes, I've heard this, but I'm going to suspend judgment. I'm not going to just think that that person's now the worst, or those group of people are just terrible just because I heard this one thing. But recognize, this proverb is very true. One side seems right to a person until you hear the other side and they have a chance to respond. So this is just a proverb that I've found in my own life to be incredibly helpful. It's one that would save us a lot of heartache or heartbreak if we took it more seriously. And so that's why I just wanted to start off with that. Does anyone have any questions or comments about this? Hopefully it makes sense, but yeah, Sue.
It almost or killed or close to it because you listened to the first people with
yes.
The strongest voices that came up.
Yeah.
True.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a number of proverbs in this chapter in particular that there are a lot of proverbs in general about the power of the tongue. But this chapter in particular, you've got a bunch of them. Verse 21 is one of those. Death and life are in the power of the tongue, and those who love it will eat its fruits. I mean, you can do a lot of damage, one, by speaking things that aren't completely true, or even if they're partially true, if you don't have the whole story, the whole context, you can really damage people's reputation and do a lot of harm to them. And you can also do a lot of harm if you're just believing every story you hear. We're supposed to be slow to receive bad reports. That's not something, if you think about the ninth commandment, is about, the maintaining and promoting of truth between people. It's not just about speaking the truth, but it's about receiving the truth and not being willing to receive and believe falsehoods or lies. Or maybe it's true, but I'm not in the position to judge. And so I just kind of, I've heard it. I can't unhear it, but I'm just going to keep it over here. Unless I hear from someone else that can confirm whether that's true or not. Does that make sense, what I'm saying there? But yeah, the mouth is a powerful thing, and only hearing one side of the story can cause a lot of problems. Yeah, Dad. Yes. Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep. Right. Yep. Yeah, Terry. The trial of Jesus, yeah. They had two witnesses that couldn't even agree together on what he had said or done in the past when they were bringing accusations against him. Right.
Sorcerer who deceives the people with all this negative speech.
Yep. Yep. Yeah, you had a whole group of people who are dedicated to. Yep. Yep. So yeah, this is a big problem we have today. And part of this is our age. The way news is presented, it's presented as. I mean, think about it this way: why is it that local news stations run stories about places that are like we have no relationship with, thousands of miles away from us? But it's presented in such a way that we are encouraged to respond with a judgment. We hear the story, and we're supposed to feel something about it. Normally something negative. We're supposed to get angry. We're supposed to be upset. We're supposed to want to take action, things like that. That's not good and proper. That goes against everything the Proverbs say about being slow, being wise, taking time to consider things, hearing both sides of a story, all that stuff. That's not the way our world operates. Our world wants us to just respond immediately. Social media, it's all about respond immediately. See this, get outraged. See this, get upset about it. And there is stuff out there that we should be upset about that does affect us, but not everything. And I think part of what this here is, take it slowly. Don't rush to judgment. Yes, right. Right. Yeah. Yeah. Fear sells. Yep. How do you get more people to watch the news? Well, it's got to mean something to watch the news. It's got to benefit you somehow. And if you're afraid, and the news is going to give you the answer in some way, then yeah, they're drumming up their own support. Any other questions or comments on this section? Anything in this chapter as a whole? I've got a couple things that we can talk about, but as we read through this chapter, or as you've read through it on your own, what are some verses that stick out to you? Any questions you may have? Anything you want to share? Any comments? Yeah, Violet.
Yeah.
Yes, verse 6 is humorous. My translation says, and for those on Zoom, a fool's lips walk into a fight, and his mouth invites a beating. The fool, he doesn't have any self-control, He doesn't realize that you shouldn't talk back to the guy that's, a foot and, 100 pounds bigger, a foot taller and 100 pounds bigger than you. And he just keeps talking, and when he gets beat up, he kind of deserved it. Yeah, another proverb I thought of when I read verse 6 is, fools rush in where monkeys fear to tread. Monkeys, they're not the smartest creatures, but if they're scared to go somewhere, you probably shouldn't go there. But fools, they don't think that way. They just run right in and get themselves into trouble. Yeah. Terry? Yeah. Verse 14. Yeah. Yeah. Man's spirit will endure sickness, but a crushed spirit, who can bear? We had a similar verse to that. I think it was verse 22. Joyful heart is good. This was from last time, chapter 17, verse 22. A joyful heart is good medicine, but a crushed spirit dries up the bones. And I think part of what you have here in verse 14 is, physical illness obviously is a burden, but it's a burden that can be carried for the most part, at least more so than, when someone's crushed in their spirit, that's the worst position that someone can be in.
And that Bible takes it, it's basically the study note talking about depression as
yes.
a spirit.
Yeah.
Where without the depression, you can endure the
sickness. Yes.
Yep. Your will to live can help you endure the sickness, but when you have depression as well as the physical, you don't have that.
Yes.
The tools come to draw.
Yeah, no, I think this is a good example of kind of the, I don't know if dangerousness, but the seriousness of depression or melancholy, as older theologians would call it, it's a very difficult position to be in. When you have hope is incredibly powerful. When you lose hope, it's a dangerous place to be in. And I think one of the takeaways, as Christians, especially, recognizing that there are people who experience this. For a variety of reasons, Psalm 88 is probably the most famous example. It's a psalm that's filled with darkness. Christians experience that. And those are things that we need to have care and love and concern for and do our best to come alongside. And if their spirit is crushed so that they can't, carry themselves right now, well, maybe part of the grace of God is He gave us the body of Christ that we can come alongside them and help carry them along the way. It's kind of like, if you know Lord of the Rings and Sam and Frodo, Frodo's got this ring that he's carrying and it's a terrible burden and he gets to a point where he can't carry it anymore. And his friend Sam comes along and Sam says, well, I can't carry the ring for you. I can't carry that burden, but I can carry you. And he carries Frodo up the side of the mountain. And sometimes that's as Christians what we need to be when people are going through this kind of thing. Yeah, Dad. Verse 2. A fool takes no pleasure in understanding, but only in expressing his opinion. Yeah, it's pretty straightforward. I mean, we've got a number of verses here about the fool. But this one in particular, it takes a little bit of a jab at a fool. It's an idea of pride, because all the fool cares about is his thoughts. His words, what's coming out of his mouth, his opinion is all that matters. He loves to hear his own voice, and he's not willing to listen. And that's something that's contrasted with the wise person. The wise person loves knowledge. We actually have a verse in here about that. Verse 15, an intelligent heart acquires knowledge, and the ear of the wise seeks knowledge. That's the opposite of verse 2. Verse 2, fool's like, I just want to hear myself talk. I don't care what anyone else has to say. Verse 15, the wise person, they want truth. They want knowledge. They want what's right. And they are willing to sit and listen and be humble and hear what others have to say. So, yeah, George. Yeah. Right. Yeah, this one I was trying to figure this one out for a little bit earlier today. What about what the lot here is supposed to mean, and especially how it connects with quarrels. But a number of people I was reading, they brought in political issues that those are some of the most contentious issues you have are, you know, kings fighting each other. And part of the idea that they were talking about is, well, the lot is determined by God, ultimately. It's not that you want to make every decision by lot, per se. That's not the purpose of it. But sometimes it's better that if you can't make a judgment between the two, give it over to God, let the lot determine it, and that just puts an end to the discussion. Perhaps something a little bit more benign is, your kids are arguing about what movie you want to watch, and you're like, you know, half of them want this movie, half of them want this movie, and it's like, well, coin flip. Can't argue with the coin flip, as long as it's, you know, not a trick coin. As long as it's fair, it's like, okay, that's a simple way to diffuse the quarreling and make a decision. So, yeah, I think that's probably what's going on there. Randy, yeah.
I was I thought asking monastery was something that you're supposed to do.
We talked about this some last week in terms of like the Uman and Thuman, what was given to the high priest. And so there was this special, there's a special role that it played in the life of Israel for the making of major decisions. And that hasn't continued on today. So just to make an example, you know, there are some churches that they will use lots for determining of who should be officers in the church. Kind of similar to what the apostles did when they replaced Judas. I would argue that should not be a normative thing for us today. I think what's happening here in verse 18 is it's not one. It's making an observation about experience, about how and lot can be used, I think, in different ways. Uman and Thuman, I think, is different than flipping a coin, though it's the kind of same general category. And I think what's the point being made here is an observation about there are ways that something like flipping a coin or that kind of lot can be used to get rid of, and here's the goal, it puts an end to quarrels, it decides between powerful contenders, and so you've got strong wills fighting over something, you're not going to be able to resolve it normally without blood and war and fighting. This is a better alternative. Does that make sense? Another example would be, who's going to get the last piece of pizza? Rock, paper, scissors. Winner gets the pizza, you know. That's a more benign example. You know, powerful contenders, that sounds like king's fight. And it'd be better to settle a quarrel through flipping a coin versus going to war. And so I think that's what it's more emphasizing. I wouldn't say that this should not be your first solution to trying to settle disagreements. But if you're at an impasse, flip a coin and let that be the deciding factor. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
So. Yes, Becky. Verse 1. So I thought this was going to be an easy verse, and then I started reading people and I'm like, wait a second, this is actually a really hard verse. Part of the reason it's hard is because apparently this is a difficult, there's difficult translation questions. So in the ESV it reads, whoever isolates himself seeks his own desire, he breaks out against all sound judgment. But there are other translations, and I forgot to write this one down, but there are other translations that make it sound like this is actually a positive thing. Like the way it reads in the ESV, it's negative. Like you shouldn't isolate yourself. That is contrary to wisdom. There are some translations that almost make it out to be a positive thing that the one who is going off by himself is seeking wisdom, as in kind of like trying to figure out the situation. Yeah, Dad. Yeah, that seeketh and intermeddleth with all wisdom from the KJV kind of has that idea of this, the way it's interpreted is this, the seeking out of wisdom, and so the going off by himself is so that he can try to dedicate himself to searching out wisdom. So, you've got one version that says this going off by oneself to dedicate oneself to learning wisdom, that's a good thing. The ESV, the way they interpret it and translate it, it makes it sound like a negative thing. So, yeah, Terry. Okay, there's another translation.
That's in the Bible. If he was self-seeking or craving, he has all sound judgment, he shows contempt.
He who is selfish seeks a craving, and what was the last part?
He has all sound.
Okay, so I'm not going to be able to settle the translation issue for you. But what I will do is, I haven't thought about the new translation option, so I will explain kind of the big ideas, because I think the principles of the first two translations we talked about are true whether or not this verse is talking about that, which one it's talking about. So, the positive one is this aspect of this diligence and willingness to seek out wisdom. We've seen that in other Proverbs. That's a good thing. We should dedicate ourselves to that. The wise man views wisdom as valuable and good and will pursue it. I think the negative, version from the ESV, I think it's getting at this other idea that you also see. Wisdom is found in a multitude of counselors. It can be a very dangerous situation. I've seen this as well, that when people isolate themselves, you know, it's not good to end up in a room by yourself and just your own thoughts, especially when you're trying to figure out a difficult issue. In fact, I've got a pastor friend who's written on the topic of why you need friends to be a good theologian. Because we're a community. God has given us a body. We're a body of Christ. And yes, you've got different body parts, hands, feet, legs, arms, noses, whatever, but we work together. Iron sharpens iron. We need each other to build each other up. And when you're just by yourself, you might miss them. And having a multitude of counselors, wise people, can be is a really valuable and important thing. Yeah, Mom. Mm-hmm. Yep. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We have a woman in our church, 80 plus years old, who struggles seriously with depression. And anytime we know she's missing 3 weeks from home, we have to
help her. Yeah. Right. Yep. Yeah, it's exactly right. One of the tactics that Satan uses is to try to isolate, get them by themselves, separate them. There's an old story. I think I shared this before of a pastor who was out visiting. It must have been up north because they had a fire burning in the fireplace, and so it must have been cold. But he went out to visit this guy who had not been attending church for a while and was encouraging him to come back to church. And the guy's like, well, I don't need to go to church, this, that, and the other thing. And the pastor was thinking about how to respond, and he goes to the fireplace, he grabs the tongs, and he pulls one of the coals out of the fire and sets it on the hearth. And he says to the guy, well, what's going to happen to that coal? And he says, well, it's going to go out. Why? Because it's been separated from the rest of the fire. Guy was in church the next Sunday. illustrating that idea of, you know, when you separate yourself off on your own, you wither, you go cold, you'll burn out if you're apart from the body of Christ. Yeah, Kathy. Yeah, we are to be accountable. Yeah. Anything else on that topic or idea? Did I answer the question on verse 1? Becky, did that help? Okay. You didn't realize it was going to be that big. Yeah. That's true. Yeah. I should be careful. It's not that being by yourself is never wrong. I think I said that wrong. It's not like it's always wrong to be by yourself. but there's a difference between going off by yourself and isolation / lone rangering it. Yes. Yes, exactly. Yeah. Yeah, solitude and isolation. Those are big deal. Big, very big differences. Yeah. All right. Anything else from this chapter? Yeah, Deb. Verse 9, yeah. Whoever is slack in his work is a brother to him who destroys. So, again, another translation thing here. Some translations will translate destroys as a waster. So he's a brother. Whoever is slack in his work is a brother to him who is a waster. And so the idea here is, I think this is a comparison with for the lazy person. That's the first part. Whoever is slack in his work, that's the lazy person. We've seen a lot of proverbs about that. Of course, then you've got a person on the other side who wastes things. He destroys things. He doesn't use them well, you know, things like that. And so whether you're like that, where you're not being a good steward, or you're one who's just lazy and doesn't produce anything, those are the same kind of thing. They're brothers to each other. And so I think that's what this verse is trying to get across there. Does that make sense? Okay. Yeah, I was a little confused as well by the destroys part. And then once I got the idea of waster, it's like, okay, I get what's trying to be communicated here. All right, anything else in this chapter? Yes, 22 is a great verse. It is, yes. He who finds a wife finds a good thing and obtains favor from the Lord. Two parts of this. One, you know, God said it's not good for a man to be alone. So he made a helper fit for him. You know, it's good for, you know, to get married. And to find a spouse. It's a blessing. And there's other proverbs that will talk about the blessing and richness of finding a good wife. But the other part of it is, obtains favor from the Lord. There's an aspect where, you know, when a man finds a wife, that's God's blessing. Now that doesn't mean, you know, Paul talks about, you know, I wish everyone was single like I am so I can serve the church and things like that. So, that doesn't mean that, being single is always a bad thing, in contrast, or not a blessing from the Lord. But a good godly spouse is a great blessing. That's favor from God. That's a good thing. And it can be, I think that's something that's helpful to think about. Cause of course, when, you know, when you're married, you know, you're, it's two sinners living together. There's going to be conflict. There's going to be hard times. It's not always great. But it's important to remember that your spouse is a gift to you. You remember Adam in the garden when you have the fall and, you know, God's coming and confronting them. What does Adam do? He says, the woman that you gave to me, she gave me the fruit and I ate it. It's like he started blaming God, like, hey, you're the one that messed up. You gave me this wife. Well, Proverbs here says, no, actually, that's favor from the Lord. That's a blessing. That's a good thing. Adam and Eve, they're the ones that screwed up. It wasn't God. He gave a good gift to Adam, but he didn't correct her. He didn't stop her when Satan tempted her. So thinking of our spouses in that way, in terms of a blessing from the Lord, obtaining favor, I think that's a helpful way to help overcome some of the negatives that we can fall into if we're not careful. Yeah, Dad.
Saying that the Lord wants the right person to laugh. Here it's saying, even God's.
Right.
Speaking to
right.
He's actually on the news.
Yeah, I think.
I speak to arranged marriages also. I don't know. I saw an arranged marriage and he finds a good wife.
Well. The way I kind of, so, yeah, yeah, you get into interesting questions and you go down that road. But, I think there is supposed to be an activeness. I mean, I think even examples you have in Genesis, you know, Isaac doesn't go out and seek his wife, but Abraham sure does. He takes a very active role in it. Jacob, well, he has to be active because he's kind of kicked out of the family. And so he's on his own, but he takes an active role in that. And so you're going to have a variety of circumstances, but yes, I think there is some kind of activity, at least on the man's part, in terms of, yeah, don't just sit on your hands. Like, don't complain to God about not having a wife if you're not willing to go out and try to find a wife. So, yeah, start with asking her name. Terry.
And the one who's found a good wife, as opposed to a Joe's wife, for instance.
No, that's a good point. And I think there is another. Let me see if I can find. Is it the next chapter? Well, it talks about a prudent wife is from the Lord. I thought there was a verse that did what? Yeah, 19:14 talks about a prudent wife. House and wealth are inherited from fathers, but a prudent wife is from the Lord. That's an interesting verse. I thought there was another one that may have talked about a good wife, but yeah, there was one commentator who talked about, he put it a little strongly. I'm just going to have to paraphrase it, but it was basically like, a bad wife isn't even worthy of the term wife. And so that's why he just says wife here and doesn't have to even qualify it with good. That was an interesting way to put it, but yeah, it's the idea of because you have verses that are negative about bad wives, but here's a verse that's positive about a good wife, and good wives are tremendous blessings, great blessings from the Lord. Yeah.
It's not a great blessing if your wife's going to curse God.
No, Job's wife is, not that. That's not wise counsel. That's not, not a good thing. So. All right. Well, we're getting close to 9:40. So any other final questions, comments, anything you want to talk about, from this chapter before we close tonight? Did I say 9:40? I meant 6:40. Wow. It's been a lot. Sorry, I'm tired. Somewhere. That's right. All right. Well, let's go ahead and turn to prayer.